You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 16 April. We had Chinese house price index data out a couple of hours ago, minus 4.5% year on year. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Pethley Radenhase. Is the selling over? Is he still being cautious? Is he bullish? Tian Pan from Prescient China. The Chinese response to the tariffs so far. Chipumu Wasawi from Absa CIB, the February Merchant Spend Analytics Report. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Trump's tariffs affect just a few SA exporters, but will hurt everyone. Uncertainty about global growth comes as local economy faces multiple problems. And from Business Day, Reserve Bank warns of a 0.7 GDP contraction in its worst case scenario. Bank details grim prospects in its April monetary policy review, also explores less severe scenarios, and rates seem higher for longer. Morning markets, yes, was mixed. S&P down 0.2%, NASDAQ is up 0.2%, and the 10-year a little bit better again at 4.336%. Over in the east, mostly red. Sydney up 0.2%, Hong Kong off 2.5%, Tokyo down 0.5%, Tencent down 2.9%. Commodities are mostly green. Gold futures, 3,292. Brent is the red at 64.49. Platinum is 968. Palladium, 977. The rand is 1905. Bitcoin, 83,800. Top 40 opening call, looking for a red open, 420 points or 0.5% down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Pethley Radenhase. You find him, of course, at Herenia Capital Advisors. Pethley, we chatted just over 2 weeks ago. It was 1st of April. It was just ahead of Liberation Day. At that point, markets had been under pressure. You said another 10% down on US indices. We got that, almost exactly 10% down. We have now bounced. How are you looking at this market? Are you still being cautious? Do you think we've got more upside? Do we make new all-time highs, perhaps, in the near term?
Well, good morning, Si. And yes, I was extremely bullish up until Chinese data. my sort of feel here was that we probably, just looking at the stock 40 index, we're a scratch away from all-time highs. Anyway, so that's a fairly safe call to make at this stage, right? However, looking at the reaction that we're seeing in the East of the housing data, that came out of China sort of early hours in the morning, I think that we're back to our primary roadmap. So we've now seen that, orange man bad because tariffs. Mm-hmm. So essentially then the tariffs are rolled back and you've got 90 days to negotiate and this and that, whatever. But from here, the market can take a more rational sort of approach and will basically move on the now effect of the tariffs. So at some point, the tariffs will be put in place again in less than 90 days from now, I suppose. Yeah. Those that have negotiated will get better terms. Those who have not will not. Essentially, we'll see a bit of a reaction to the market then again. So the base expectation was that we see the markets kind of realize that, wait a minute, as interest rate cutting cycle is bad news because the economy is in trouble. So I think that we go back to that sort of realization. I think in the short term, though, we'd probably make new highs. I'm looking at this Hang Seng index, though, and I'm thinking that that is a very mean looking candle. It's down 2.5% in the day.
Yeah,
it's made a proper reversal candle. So it feels as though Hang Seng is going to come down a little bit from here. Let's just take from where it is now. We're looking at maybe 7 or 8% at least. That will take it down to the lows that it saw just last week, right?
Yeah.
Immediate expectation is that whether or not we then break lower from there and come under quite a bit more pressure, I'm not 100% sure. What we've seen is it bounce off a long-term moving average. the Hang Seng Index in particular. I mean, well, most other things, the US as well. So we might sort of test that moving average a little bit. I think that's that moving average is kind of the major trend indicator. So now, just for reference, that's a 200-week moving average. Yeah. so if for those who are listening and want to chart it, 200-week, so on a weekly chart for a 200-period moving average, that moving average, I think, is our primary trend indicator. If we can stay above that, we're bullish, we're going to new highs, you know, the trend is up. Once we break and hold below that, so let's say we break below it, we'll probably come back up and test it over 2-3 weeks. If we then sort of make another turn down, then we have a, basically a repeat of what I think it was 2022 was was a bearish year, right? So we'll see the same. We'll have a year downwards, 25% down for the whole year. We've done 10%. We've done halfway already. So it's not that much worse that's ahead, right? So our outlook, look around, see if we can buy value. When we get a big bounce like we saw in the market now, try to sell into that. If there's a new high, great. Don't get too sucked into that euphoria. The base expectation for the year is down because of the macroeconomic cycle currently being an interest rate cutting cycle. At some point, we think they're probably going to have to stimulate. And of course, then Bitcoin's going to fly, as are equity markets. Okay. So
I hadn't thought of that. Actually, some stimulus coming, absolutely. And to your point, there was a ton of Chinese data. I focused on the bad one, which was housing prices. Some of it was better. GDP was plus 5%, which is what Xi Jinping wants. But that housing data index is, ugly. Very, very ugly. Off the worst, but no less ugly. We'll leave it there. Petra Raden has Herenia Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Ting with Tien Pan, he's head of strategy and product at Prescient China. Tien, appreciate the time today. And all of the on-off trade wars coming out of the White House, although China's mostly on, some exceptions over the weekend, although now we're told there might be short-term. The one thing that is quite noticeable is that China is, I don't know, I mean, they're not panicking. They're kind of sort of sitting back and quietly getting on with their day, although reports are today that they said they won't buy Boeing aircraft anymore. This probably the right approach for China and I think is important in the whole scope.
Yeah, I think when Trump won the elections, I think there was a preference for a Trump presidency over a Harris presidency due to his directness. Obviously, this directness has really overblown. But I think what's encouraging is that on the Chinese side, it appears all of their responses seem well planned and advanced. So it's not as if all of these scenarios that we're currently facing are coming to them as a shock. And I think, like you mentioned, one of the very important reasons that China is actually standing up, actually the only country, obviously alone the European Union with some retaliatory tariffs and Canada, but the main country standing up against the current Trump tariffs. I think one key message they're trying to send is that China as a whole, hopefully, that they want to be representing most of the world, that they want to be trading under sort of a World Trade Organization, WTO framework, and following the sort of rules that everybody benefits and agrees to and has agreed to for decades. So I think that's the key issue that they want to emphasize, with a lot of pain that they'll also be taking with the retaliation.
Yeah, and it's that starkness too, as you say, it's sort of not doing anything knee-jerk. And I remember chatting with you and you saying that they would prefer Trump. How big is China direct exports to the US in their life? I mean, is it a significant number for China?
In absolute terms, almost $500 billion. Okay. Annually now. So it's a massive number. But in terms of GDP, it's only around 3% of China's GDP. So it's not that much. Although, I mean, if we look at it sort of in relative terms, if China misses its 5% per annum GDP growth target and only gets 4%, it's like a major failure. So that 3%, although it looks small in absolute terms, is actually going to have a big impact on economic growth this year, if nothing changes.
Yeah, I take your point. You mentioned the WTO. Of course, there's also the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. That is a trading bloc. Does that, I mean, I imagine, and it's one of, if not the biggest sort of trading bloc in the world, does that give them some flexibility and some scope?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you saw President Xi Jinping of China not coming out publicly to respond in any way, shape, or form to the Trump tariffs. And he's actually just visited Vietnam, or visiting Vietnam to sort of promote bilateral ties. And he's on a sort of Southeast Asia tour this coming week. So it is very, very important, as you say. And obviously, the Trump tariffs originally hitting all of sort of key trade partners in the ASEAN region with China before obviously pausing with a temporary 10% tariff. So it is sort of the region that's got the highest potential in terms of population growth, in terms of economic growth going forward. And China's got strong relations with most of the countries in the region. So I think it is an area that they are clearly openly focusing on.
Yeah. What about currencies? And I hear all sorts of stories. I never know which is which. You're on the ground in China. What is the realities around the Chinese currency at this point?
Yeah. So the Chinese currency, I mean, there's been lots of headlines saying, oh, the Chinese currency has really fallen to its lowest rate. But it's relative to the dollar, it's really just fallen marginally. I think if I look at the USD CNY rate today, it's at 0.30. And prior to Trump's Liberation Day announcement of tariffs, it was at 7.27. So we only just dropped 3 cents, or maybe just under 0.5% over the period. But I think the key is we need to look at the dollar index. The dollar index over the last week and a half has dropped about 4%. And over the last few months, has dropped 8%, whereas the CNY relative to US dollar hasn't moved. So relative to all other currencies, the CNY has actually depreciated. So there is some sort of that indirect buffer for Chinese exports increasing competitiveness, not that they needed it or need it, into exports to the rest of the world rather than the US.
Concerns around US inflation, the FT weekend, this last weekend was talking around 4% inflation in the US. Is there risk of inflation in China, or are we perhaps going to see diverging paths as perhaps the US starts to incur inflation and perhaps China less so?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot more upside risk to US inflation in our view. So, I mean, the core inflation in the US around 2.8% currently, and you're rightfully so, direct impact all over these tariffs could easily take US inflation back up to sort of the 4% mark. And that's, I mean, there are various sort of estimates of indirect impact. I mean, housing is a massive part of the US CPI basket. There's no direct impact of the tariffs, but I mean, if landlords, for example, felt poorer because everything is more expensive, they decide to increase rent on average on the masses, and you get all of a sudden an indirect huge impact on US CPI. So those are some of the risks that we're looking at in the US. In terms of China, China is actually grappling with a deflation problem. So it's actually got a lot more room to play with. A little bit of inflation is actually going to be good for the Chinese economy. Not great for consumer sentiment, but it's able to handle some inflation a lot better than the US.
Yeah, a little increase not going to be the worst for China. A last question, left the hardest for last. You and your colleagues are prescient. I mean, what are you thinking doing in terms of looking to mitigate risk? We don't know where we stand. There is a pause. No one knows. How are you sort of managing it?
Yeah, so I mean, there's so much risk in the markets right now, and there's so many scenarios where we are faced with a binary type of outcome. So, I mean, if Trump decides to add more tariffs, all of a sudden markets are just one way down. If Trump decides to pause or perhaps cancel everything, all of a sudden there'll be a market frenzy and a market rally. So what we are trying to do is position ourselves not to be at risk to massive binary outcomes. So we are highly experienced in derivative usage in our portfolios throughout the last decades. And we are very much making use of derivatives for protection in our portfolio. So one thing is that we want to protect ourselves on the downside, given the downside market volatility. But with the Chinese government not officially coming out with anything to say that they are abandoning their 5% GDP growth target this year, it gives us sort of quite a clear message that they're going to have to stimulate really hard to reach that 5%, considering that a lot of US exports are going to disappear, at least for this year, or at least for the next few months. So we also want to position ourselves for that rally that comes through when the stimulus comes through. So we've spent some money to buy protection, protect on the downside, while maintaining as much upside as we can. So I think that's sort of the core direction that we work in. Obviously, portfolio tilts within specific industries where we feel they are more risk to trade rather than sort of benefit to stimulus and all of that. So overall, we are cautious, but we are still bullish because of the expected policies that may come out on China's side.
And that's a good point. They're sticking to their 5%. They're going to need to stimulate that. We leave it there, Tian Pan, head of strategy product at Prescient China. Thanks for your time. Interesting. Tian and Pietri both think stimulus. Pietri for America, Tian for China. But our poll today is around this trade war between China and US, particularly those two superpowers. Who do you think's winning? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Chipo Misawi, senior coverage banker at Absa CIB. Chipo, appreciate the time today. The Absa Merchant Spend Analytics report is out February 2025. Feb did see another decline, but less severe than the decline we saw in January. So things are stabilizing, perhaps we could say.
Absolutely. Simon, thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, no, the Absa Merchant Spend Analytics report for February 2025 did show a general decline in card spending across most categories, reducing overall card spending and transaction volumes. However, you know, this card spending has slowed compared to the decline that we experienced in January 2025, as you alluded to. And just putting some numbers to this, right? So we saw in January, the card spend was negative 22% versus negative 10% in February. And so while the rate of this negative growth has slowed since January, you know, the sort of that negative aspect of the growth still persists in February. And there are like several contributing factors likely to influence this. And I think the first one, which is looking at February, it's a much shorter month, shorter in length, fewer spending days. So this inherently limits the potential positive recovery in overall spending. And also looking at the sort of the second factor is just the prevalence of substantial discounts and clearance sales that we typically see during the months of January and February in South Africa. You know, discounting, retail discounts and clearance sales actually do play a significant role in card spending performance. And what typically happens in the month of January and February is retailers strategically use these 2 months to liquidate the existing inventory, existing stock, and ultimately make way for upcoming autumn and winter collections. And this promotional activity undoubtedly shapes card spending patterns. And so in essence, the first 2 months of the year really do present a sort of a real complex interplay of the post-holiday austerity, calendar effects, retail promotional strategies, all of which then do contribute to the observed spending trends that we saw in the months of January and February.
That's a great point. Jan and Feb, tough months. Kids back to school, everything. And of course, the retailers coming to the party as well. Online shopping is still strong. And in fact, online shopping up massively while in-store flat. We are moving more and more to an online world. I mean, it accelerated in the pandemic, but it is just that convenience. And with respect to our retailers, they do it very well in most cases.
Absolutely. Online shopping, e-commerce is still growing. It's still growing in double digits as more and more consumers make use of online shopping because of its availability and just the general flexibility of the online world. So online shopping does remain a growth leader. In fact, some numbers that we're seeing is online grocery shopping in particular is up about 51% year to date, while in-store card spending, like you rightly mentioned, remains flat. You know, this trend really does indicate to us this persistent shift to online platforms by consumers for day-to-day essentials. The shift to online spending is also being fueled by competitive pricing, the time-saving convenience of shopping online, and of course, just an expansion in the delivery services by many of the major retailers across South Africa.
The township market, certainly spending is growing. My sense is it's very much more a cash and informal economy, a huge opportunity, growth happening there, but also sort of mobile apps. I'm thinking PayShap, for example, which is what came along, I think, about 2 years ago. So also sort of driving spend in townships.
No, absolutely. The township economy is flourishing. In fact, we believe, and many retailers believe, that it's a frontier for growth. And what we're seeing is these flourishing township economies are, in essence, reshaping card spending behavior, diverting spending away from your traditional retail channels. like you mentioned, these localized economies often operate with a much higher prevalence of informal trading and cash transactions, physical cash transactions, which make it really difficult for us to track ultimately the spending through traditional card spending data. So what this ultimately means is a growing portion of our card spending may actually be occurring outside the scope of traditional card transaction analysis. And furthermore, I think this is a point you mentioned, that the township economies are changing the payment landscape away from formal credit card market to mobile money wallets, mobile apps like your PayShop and other digital payment platforms that we see being used quite frequently in these economies.
Yeah, and as you say, a large economy, not to be discounted, just a different way perhaps of doing the transactions than the more traditional urban areas. We leave it there. That's Jibu Masawi, Chief Coverage Banker, Absa CIB. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Carmen Maparani yesterday, talking around the JSE share as a potential investment option. Increased volatility means more trading volumes, nice dividend yields. She was not convinced, but we asked you if you were holding the share. Around 40% each said we'll have a look. Well, no real growth. That lack of growth was what concerned Carmen. The rest said, yeah, great dividend, which is almost 7%. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening. My guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Can history help us know where the gold price is going?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.